Ladies and gentlemen, we, people of color, daughters and sons of immigrants, we belong to Europe. I am, we are the story of Europe. Welcome to this new episode of We Belong, a podcast that gives a voice to the new daughters of Europe. Those who find their roots from abroad, immigrants and daughters of immigrants, they represent the Europe of tomorrow. They are committed women, brave women, hard-working women, and they will have a mic to narrate their story. My guest today was recognized one of the Forbes 30 Under 30 most promising personalities in Europe. She had, with her colleague Tahar Yani, an amazing idea to create a website sharing positive news about Muslim. And Muslim is the name of this website that scores millions of visitors every week. Her name is Hanan Shalouki, and she's from Belgium. Hello, Hanan.
Hi.
Thank you for accepting this invitation of We Belong.
It's my honor.
Thank you. First of all, as a tradition of We Belong, the guest has to choose a word. So what is your word?
My word is impact, because everything I do or everything I try to do, every project that I start or every business, I'm always focused on creating impact, creating results that can change society or change someone's life.
Amazing. Impact, society, change. Hanan, you are Belgian. You grew up in Anvers, right?
Yes.
Your parents are first generation immigrants?
Yes, they are first generation immigrants from Morocco, and they migrated to Belgium in the 70s.
So you grew up and received an education from immigrants' parents living in Belgium. How were you perceived as a daughter of immigrants?
Well, of course, when I was a child, I was not very, I didn't really notice how people looked at me. But as you grow up, you start realizing that being the daughter of an immigrant, it comes with a lot of stereotypes. Definitely in Belgium, about the Moroccan community, there are quite some negative stereotypes. And then, of course, the fact that you're Muslim, your mother comes to pick you up at school wearing a hijab, those are all things that, you know, it can work against you. So I was always perceived as a little different than everyone else, I think.
And did you recall any specific episode during your early years that made you realize how the society was perceiving you as a Muslim?
I do remember, like, you know, when you're a kid and it's Ramadan, and as Muslims we fast, and you know, children are not, you know, they don't have to fast, but it's always nice to participate, you know, just a couple of days, try it out, and you can be the cool kid that also can starve herself the entire day. And I remember, like, when I used to do that, that would, even just like 2 days a week or one day in the weekends or like on a Wednesday, because Wednesday we only had a half day at school. And then kids would be like, why are you not eating? Or why are you not drinking? Or why didn't your parents give you food to take with you to school? So those are like questions that, you know, you don't really think about it a lot, I think. But as a child, you already have to be responsible for certain decisions and be able to answer these questions.
Lots of curiosity and...
Yeah, kids are curious.
Yes, definitely. And it's during your studies, right, that you decided you had this idea to create Muslim. How did the idea come and how did you build the project?
Well, so I was in my last year at the University of Antwerp. I was studying communication sciences, and I have a master's degree in strategic communications. And I was in my last year, which is when I met Tahar Yani, my colleague, on campus. And we were both present at a charity event at the university, and we just started talking about lots of frustrations that we shared, a lot of negative imaging from from Muslim minorities and how we felt about that. And you know, we had a really long conversation and we ended the conversation with, why are we complaining about this? Why are we not just changing this? Or why are we not doing anything? And that's basically how it started. After that, we met up a couple of times and we started discussing the ideas. How would we start? Who would we need? And that's basically how Muslim started. And it started, in Belgium, with a couple of close friends, people that would help us out. And then it became very international very soon, because everything was in English, so everyone can read and follow. And you know, it all went pretty quickly, I can say.
So it took two activators, two people that wanted to change things to make this happen. And
yes, exactly.
Amazing. What do you think were the main, you know, difficulties that you encountered during, you know, the steps that led you to create this website? And how was the website perceived at the beginning before becoming more successful?
I think the most difficult thing in the beginning was just, you know, to combine it with everything else that we were doing. Like I was studying, I was getting my degree. Taha was in his first year of computer sciences, and you know, we would have classes all day and then go home and then work on Muslim for 6 more hours, and you know, it could really drain your energy, because it was not, in the beginning, it was not a business. It was just a website that we created, and we weren't making any money with it. So it was really something that still had to be built up out of nothing. And I think if you ask, like, how was it perceived, it was always perceived, like, pretty positively. Even in Belgium, where we have some kind of, you know, sometimes very negative tendencies in our mainstream media when it comes to minorities, even here it was relatively, everyone was relatively positive. Like, people were saying, like, okay, it's a great initiative and you're doing something good and you're trying to make a point. And I think we succeeded in that.
And were you surprised by the success? Did you expect it?
Oh, I definitely did not expect it. I hoped it. Of course, if you start something, you always hope that it's going to be a success. But I didn't expect it. I was pretty open back then. You know, I didn't mind if it was going to be a success or not. I just wanted to do something, create change, and I hoped it was going to work. But even if it didn't, I still would have given it my all and my best. So I guess I was always hoping for it to become what it became today.
And I think it takes a lot of time to gather all those contributors. Today you have more than 300, if I don't make mistake.
Well, of course, today we don't have Muslim anymore. Like, a couple of days ago, we sold the platform. So now it has new owners and an entirely new team. But it was of course, it was a big challenge to build it up, because it was a lot of volunteers, and everyone working with volunteers knows that after a while, you know, you lose some volunteers and then new come in, and then so there's a constant change in who is creating content. But I think that's good, because it's always brought a variety of perspectives.
You just said it, that you recently sold this company, Muslim.
Yes.
We were all very surprised to learn this on April 15, the 5th anniversary of Muslim. You announced this. Why? What is the reason behind this? And what's next also?
Yeah, of course, it's a very personal something, you know, and it was very difficult to make that decision. But, you know, after we created Muslim, we also founded our agency, Aliens. It's a creative agency that is focused on inclusive communications. And suddenly it became very hard to combine the two, because we had a lot of we needed a lot of energy and time to build the agency, and the agency brought in money and it brought in the funds that we needed to keep Muslim going. And then, of course, you can't do everything. It can become very difficult and very hard and very draining after a while. So we had put so much energy and time in Aliens, and that Muslim was starting to become like a second project, and we didn't want that, because we felt like it's a beautiful societal project. It has a huge impact, and we can't let it just get to nothing after we've put so much energy and time in it and built it up to something that a lot of people really admire and it inspires so many people around the world. And so we decided like, okay, what are we going to do? Because we have the agency now, we have a team, we have clients, we have lots of projects. We can't just, you know, divide our attention very easily between the two. And, you know, we also felt like building up Muslim in Belgium was not easy, because most of our partners and the people that wanted to work with us were abroad. They were in the United States or in the UK or Australia or even Malaysia. And it was very hard because of our geographical location to take Muslim to another level. And so I talked about this a lot with my co-founder, and we've had so many discussions and talks like, okay, what will the next step be? And then we decided to sell it, to give it to new owners, not for the money or for something purely business, but mostly because we wanted Muslim to have like new owners, good owners that would be able to put in the time and the energy that we could no longer put in. And also that would be able to make it more successful simply because it's in a better location. And that's when we met a company in London who was very interested. And, you know, after some negotiations and everything, we decided to sell it to them.
So it's a strategic decision. And it's also in line with your focus to, you know, build impact and be focused.
Yes.
On, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because by moving Muslim to London, I am sure that it will be able to reach even more people and generate even more impact simply because it's located better. For us, it was always important that whoever would be the next owners of Muslim would be able to take it to another level, but also to maintain its vision and maintain its focus. Like, we didn't want it to become just another very commercial page, for example. We still wanted it to inspire people and unite people. And I believe we really found that.
And you said it, the success, the majority of the success, the majority of the audience of Muslims is abroad, and particularly in the United States. How do you explain this?
Well, of course, the platform was in English, so we knew that we were aiming for a very international audience. And I think, you know, it's very difficult to explain, but of course, there are more people in the United States that would benefit from a platform like Muslim than in Belgium. We have different ethnic minorities, religious minorities in Belgium as well, but it's a small country. So relatively, it's very normal that if it would grow, it would need to have an audience from other countries. And we've had a couple of American contributors in the beginning. And of course, you know, they would share their articles and content in their network, and then other people would too. And that's how it really got started. And before we knew it, we had an audience of 30% that came from the United States.
Can we say that, maybe I will dare saying this, but can we say that maybe the atmosphere of the current presidency in the United States, the context allowed also Muslim to be, you know, to grow and to be more visible because of the awareness and the, you know, attacks against Muslim people that occur?
Yes and no, because maybe the current presidency is very controversial, but we found a Muslim in 2015, and it was still under President Obama back then. But of course, the many attacks against Muslims, the very Islamophobic narrative at times, it made sure that people had a need when it comes to media, when it comes to content. And I think that we were there to provide that.
And Europe, what about Europe? The Muslim population is often, as you said, portrayed in a negative way in Belgian medias, but also in other medias around the region. And your mission to give positive narratives should speak to many young Muslims in Europe. Why did you have less success, let's say, in Europe?
Yeah, I think we were still popular in Belgium and the Netherlands because of course we were located here. But I think language is also a tricky thing. For example, I think if we would have done it in French, for example, that we would have been able to reach more people living, especially in Belgium, but also in France, of course, and a lot of African countries where French is one of the main languages. But I think the fact that we chose to do it in English, we tried to keep it as open as possible, but I didn't think back then that it would have such a big impact. And I think we also had an audience definitely in European countries. There are people that followed us from all these different countries, but it's true. Relatively, it was always a lot more popular in the English speaking world.
And I imagine that the audience that read you, or at least used to read, I imagine that the majority is Muslim. But did you also receive feedbacks from people that are not Muslims and that acknowledge, you know, this voice that was absent from public?
Yes, definitely. Because we've always estimated that about 10% of the people that followed us or that read our content was actually non-Muslim. We got so many emails, messages, feedback from non-Muslims just speaking out and saying, wow, maybe they had very negative thoughts about Muslims, but because of our articles, they completely changed their mind, or we just brought something different than the classic stereotypical image of Muslims just being terrorists or very aggressive or oppressed. So we got a lot of feedback from non-Muslims, and we definitely appreciated that.
And I hope that it, you know, filled a little bit the gap that exists between media and minorities in Europe.
Yeah, I definitely think it did that because, you know, when we started, it was 5 years ago, so it was 2015. If I look today at just our media landscape in Belgium, I can already see, like, there are a lot more diverse voices than there were 5 years ago. And of course, there are still many challenges, definitely when it comes to the narrative, when it comes to lack of representation. But I do believe that we've you know, added something to the debate and added something to the media landscape. That was very necessary.
That you had that impact that you were looking for.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And so today, as you said, you passed the torch and you launched recently a communication agency, Alliance, and you're still in Belgium. Mm-hmm. You also are working on a podcast. Can you tell more about it?
Yeah, the podcast, actually, it's in Dutch, it's Wat Zij Wil, which means what she wants. And it's actually something that I've started working on because of this current corona crisis. I suddenly had a lot more time to spend at home. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do with all this time? And a podcast was always something that was on my list to do. And I really wanted to create something for female entrepreneurs because I feel like there are so many challenges and so many shared experiences, and we're not discussing them, or we're not discussing how we are conquering them. And I know so many female entrepreneurs who have beautiful stories to share, but often women don't really seek the spotlight. And I wanted to create something that would change that. So I started working on the podcast and just started interviewing female entrepreneurs. Of course, everything goes virtually because of the corona measures. And well, that's how it started. And now I'm preparing for the launch because I'm launching at the beginning of May. And I hope it will, again, be a project that can impact something, that can inspire young women to become female entrepreneurs.
That's so important. And I totally agree with you because I'm working currently with a scale-up and I'm contacting CEO for a project and I don't see female women, female founders. I see very few of them, one, two, among 20 or 30 that I interview, that I contact every day. So I think there is a need to put it out there, these voices, but also to encourage more women.
Exactly. We have to encourage more women to start their own businesses. In Belgium, it's only about 30% of the women that are female founders, when I believe that we are just as talented as men, and we can be just as entrepreneurial. But the fact that many women don't see a career as an entrepreneur or are not motivated to take those steps, for me, it's a very important reason to start a podcast and to start sharing those stories. And not just entrepreneurs, because the podcast is not just for entrepreneurs, but also just for women that are driven, that have some kind of a mission, that something that they want to achieve, whether it's through a job or their own business. They want to change something, and I want to be able to help out and share these tips and tricks that can be very useful to them.
Well, we wish you the best of luck for this new adventure that you're embarking on. And you are continuing to work in Belgium, which we can say is the heart of Europe. So
I guess it is.
Yeah. What is your views on the future of Europe, and particularly in this crisis time? What do you think is the future of Europe, and does it exist, a European identity?
I think it does exist, because I think that we have different identities. You know, we are not just, I am not just a Moroccan woman. I am not just a Belgian woman. I am not just an entrepreneur, but I carry so many identities, and they are all combined. And being European is one of them, because this is where I grew up, and this is where I am confronted with daily situations and daily struggles and challenges that are very specific to Europe. So I do believe there is definitely something as a, like a European identity. But also what I find very important is, after this crisis, I hope that people will realize that this identity that we carry, whether it's a European identity or a Belgian identity, it calls for solidarity. And I think that will be the most important thing when this crisis is over. We will want to be able to look back and see if we have been there for each other, if we have helped each other out. And I think solidarity is definitely one of the things that will be measuring to see how we've dealt with this crisis, and not just the death count or the amount of patients that are in hospitals, which is also terrible, of course, but also how we as healthy people are dealing with this situation.
I will challenge you on this, because of course there is a solidarity that we are witnessing among citizens, but we're seeing still some reluctance at state level.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Especially from the Netherlands, that, you know, refuses to openly, have, for example, the Eurobonds, you know, an aid for southern European countries such as Italy or Spain. So it's really a challenge, I would say, for...
Yes, it is a challenge. That's why I said, like, those are the important things. And after this crisis, I think those are the things that we will have to look at. Like, did we do it right or not?
Definitely. It's the question. It's the question.
Yes, definitely.
But I think that you beautifully said how your different identities, characterize you and make you European. So do you consider yourself as, a daughter of Europe? And which values of Europe do you recognize yourself in today?
Oh, a daughter of Europe. That sounds so beautiful. I would say I'm a daughter of Europe, definitely. I would say my mother is in Morocco, because she was my own mother was born there. But I do consider myself a daughter of Europe, if you put it like that, of course. And when it comes to the identity, of course, it's a very sensitive topic. Like, people don't want to be pushed some kind of label, have some kind of a label on them. But I think it's okay to say that we exist of many, many, many parts. And I think when it comes to European values, diversity is for me the most important one. The fact that we are such a big geographical area where so many people, different countries, different cities, different backgrounds live in, for me, diversity is one of the most important values. The fact that we have to acknowledge that and accept that from each other is very important.
And diversity also in the languages. I know that.
Yes.
I know that even in your country there are two official languages.
Three official languages. Wow. We have the Dutch, the French, and the German language.
Oh, I didn't know the German too. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very small community. They are often forgotten.
Okay, and that's always the question: should I speak to you in French or in German or in Dutch? So for you, I will go for Dutch, which I don't speak, but I'm happy that you speak English. But yeah, that's the beautiful side of Europe: the diversity. Definitely.
Yes, exactly.
How do you imagine Europe of tomorrow?
The Europe of tomorrow, I hope, with lots more tolerance, a lot more openness towards different cultures, a lot more inclusion. I think that's the most important thing, that there is an inclusive culture where people from different countries, different backgrounds can accept each other and focus on what we share and what is similar rather than what is different.
I agree with you. And I think that the most important is to make sure that the next generation will follow. And it's beautiful to see that we have role models like you. I would say that you are, for me, at least you're a role model of a person.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Of a female entrepreneur. And I'm happy to conclude this episode with a key. What is the main key for our audience that you want to share?
The main key, well, I would say just give it a try. Whatever it is that you are trying to do, the thing is, what most people lack is a little bit of courage, which is normal because we're always afraid to be judged or afraid that someone will laugh at us or think something about us. And I think having courage is very important in this time, in this era where there's a lot of uncertainty. So if there's something that you're trying to reach, if there's something that you're trying to build, then you need a little courage and you just need to give it a try. And I think that through many experiments, through many failures, you might fall, you will get up again. That is how you learn. And that is, for me, the key to a very happy life.
Thank you. Amazing. And I think that's the main message that we'll also learn from your story is that you gave it a try and you made it to create a very successful platform that speaks to many. So thank you, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
To conclude, I'm happy to share with you my key. My key for you is the Plural Plus 2020 call for applications. Plural Plus is a youth video festival that is initiated by the United Nations Alliance on Civilizations, and they invite all young filmmakers to submit their videos about social inclusion, diversity, and prevention of xenophobia. The deadline to apply is Friday, June 19, and I really, really encourage you to submit your video. This was the end of our episode. You just listened to We Belong, which is a podcast produced by Le Cavalcade. If you like it, feel free to send us your feedback and to share it on social media. Bye!